Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 7, The Activities of King Bharat. Text number 7 we left off at. So we heard how Bharat Maharaj performed all sorts of various Vedic sacrifices for the purpose of pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev, Krishna. And of course, in those ceremonies, sometimes it appears that different demigods are being worshipped, but in actuality, a Vaishnava only ever worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although they're not disrespectful to the various demigods, nor do they try to unduly leave them out of proceedings, just like sometimes we have the premier of Victoria come here, we don't worship him. Down to him. We don't necessarily try to flatter him. We depend on Krishna, not necessarily the premier. But we don't go out of our way to leave him out of proceedings if he happens to be part of it, and he's here for a certain purpose. So the demigods are like that. They're the premiers and ministers of the universe. There's no reason to leave them out if they happen to be part of the proceedings, which is just part and parcel of the devotional service that a devotee happens to be performing. Sometimes in the course of performing yajnas, certain demigods are worshipped because they may accept, just like Agni, he may accept the offerings and along with his associates, and then give them to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev, for his enjoyment, and then that Jagya Prasad is later distributed to all the demigods. But they don't try to enjoy it before or instead of Krishna. So but from the materialist point of view, they can't perceive how there's any difference between what a devotee does and what a what the Karmakandis do. To them, they're both chanting the same mantras by and by, performing the same rituals, using the same priest sometimes. So it appears to be the same thing, but in actuality it's not. So we had a long discussion on that last week. And we also discussed about Bharat Maharaj, of course, resided in the place where the Shalagram Shilas are, which we come across here, and the various Shalagram Shilas sometimes worshipped as Varaha, Nrsimha, Vamanadev, like that, Korma, Anantasesha, Hayagriva. So, Gopi Vrindesh asked the question, you know, do we see Krishna? You know, do they worship them as Krishna? And if they worship them as Krishna, then you know, are they just all Krishna like that? And of course, we explained that yes, a devotee does worship them all as Krishna, but he worships each shalagram according to the particular you know, incarnation that they actually are. So, you know, we were describing, you know, if you're worshipping Varaha, although if you're worshipping Krishna, you don't put a flute there, nor would you put Radharani next to him. But still, so you worship him as Varaha. You know, if you're worshipping an Ashunya, you know, Shalagram, you don't put a flute, you might put weapons. And a little pralad. You don't surround him with gopis.
Well, what weapons will help you offer weapons? Actual weapons? Or
yeah, you can get weapons made from gold or, you know, like that. Or, you know, spears and shields. And, yeah, all the, you know, tridents and swords. Not guns and
Radhanath Swami said they even offer guns to Nrsimhadev.
So who? Radhanath
Swami. He offers
a gun. He doesn't offer. He was saying some devotees do. Some devotees do.
Guns and those rifles.
Yeah. And real ones or
just little toy? I don't know. They did or they do offer.
Better find that out. We don't want any gun running in this guy. We had that problem once before. One of the, going way back, one of the devotees, one of the gurus, was, his disciples were running guns amongst other things. And he ended up getting excommunicated. But anyway, I won't go. I'll say no more. But yeah, let's hope they're just little toys of the limitation game. I'd imagine that'd be so.
But they do, some devotees do offer.
Yeah.
America has a strong gun culture.
They have a strong gun culture, yeah. Yeah. Right, yeah, what did it say there?
The pastime.
Comes up many times in the Krishna book.
In the pastime, the gopis worship Katyayana.
Yeah. And Nanda Maharaj went to worship Lord Shiva with all of the Rajabasis.
Mm.
And Rukmini worshipped the sun god.
Mm.
Or Durga, I think, and Durga. And, you know, the gopis used to go and worship the sun god daily. But that was their excuse to see Krishna. And sometimes Krishna would dress up and imitate the deity of the sun god. But there are many instances of devotees worshipping demigods for the purpose of pleasing Krishna. Prabhupada mentions in that regard that for the service of Krishna, a devotee will, you know, perform any activities which is pleasing to Krishna. But a devotee will never ever, in any circumstances, you know, worship demigods for their own personal self-interest.
What if there are obstacles on the path and you need to remove them? So Ganesh comes to mind. Is that...
Do you know how to worship Ganesh?
No. No idea. But just came to mind. Like, you know, you have some problem there.
He's a devotee of Lord Narasimha Dev.
Removing impediments, that's what I create
some. When Prabhupada's disciple was asked if he could worship Ganesh, Prabhupada said yes. If you can offer him $100,000 a day, you can worship him. A week or whatever.
Is that because they might please or perform the activity and then it's the price to pay is humongous as opposed to...
It is, yeah. See, the difference is that Krishna accepts is known as Bhava Grahi Janardhan. He accepts the intention of our worship. And he accepts the love with which we offer it. If you worship the demigods, you know, there are prescribed, it has to be done according to a specific time. You know, they have certain days, they have certain tithis. Have certain phases of the bright or dark moon, certain times of the year. You can't worship them at any other time. you have to worship them at a certain place that is fit. You also have to be suitably dressed. And you have to worship them with suitable paraphernalia up to a certain standard of opulence which is agreeable to them. If that is not done, then you'll get the opposite of what you're asking for. Because if you're asking them for protection and the worship is not done properly, then you incur their wrath. Krishna is not wrathful; the demigods are. So, in order to, therefore, Prabhupada is just pointing out, how practically, the standard you would really have to come to if you wanted to chant. To worship the demigods properly. This nonsense where people get they go to a guru and the guru gives them a mantra and they just chant that mantra to the demigod and that's all they do. It's really their whole offering. And there's no purity in their heart. There's no, it's useless for all intents and purposes. But it can be a little insulting as well. And if you worship a particular demigod, then the ones that you don't worship, which is the other 330 million minus one. May not be pleased with you for worshipping one and leaving them all out. So, yes, you can worship the demigods if you, know how to do it, but in Kali Yuga, you know, the prescribed priest who may usually perform that worship. So usually what would happen if someone wanted to worship the demigods, they may invoke their presence through various priests, and then they may, you know, take the opportunity in their presence to, you know, offer some prayers or to, you know, make some other offerings or what have you. A lot of it is done through priests who know, you know, what is to be done. It's not that anyone off the street just, you know, worships a presiding deity without any knowledge of what to do. That would be like, you know, just letting one of our guests who's just walked in off the street go and worship the deities in the temple. Here's a cloth, you've got some prayers, whip them in the temple room, offer your prayer. And God only knows what they're going to do in there and how many offences they'll commit. It's done by the priest. So when they come here, they inquire from the priest, can you offer a prayer on our behalf? Which is done. So, you know, there's a lot of... yes, you can worship the demigods if it's done properly, but it's not possible in Kali Yuga. So better it's not done.
If it's that systematic, then what about those worships that are currently going on? If it's obviously they're not very authorized by the looks of it, it's just so what then are they going to incur the wrath instead? Or, I mean, no. For example, the festivals and that sort of.
Well, at best, it may be useless. You know, but you know, but the problem is then there's a false sense of protection. Also, and there can also be ramifications, because in fact, if someone takes up worship of demigods in Kali Yuga, they would have to do so by neglecting the scriptural injunctions for what is the proper mode of worship in Kali Yuga. They would have to disregard the principal instructions in order to do something which they've not been asked to do. So neither the demigods nor the Supreme Lord is going to be very pleased with that. You know, in Kali Yuga, the prime method of worship is Harinam Kirtan, even when Lord Chaitanya doesn't appear. Although they may not necessarily understand the glories of Krishna's holy name or Krishna's pastime, but nonetheless, Hari Kirtan, chanting various mantras to Vasudev and the different forms of Lord. In Satya Yuga is meditation. Treta Yuga is yajñas. A lot of demigod worship then. Treta Yuga. Big yajñas, the demigods would personally appear. It was done properly. Those demigods, though, were... participating also in the worship of Vasudeva. They were also participants to honour and worship Lord Vasudeva. They were not there to be the supreme, they were there to participate, you know, and to also to then accept the you know, some of them have a participatory role and some of them are there to accept the Jagya Prasad like that, and to accept respect, just like, you know, if you offer respect to the Prime Minister and then you offer secondary respect to his other ministers, like that. It's not that they don't get any respect or, you know, any tributes. So in... you know, in Dwapara Yuga, you know, the prime method was, you know, deity worship and chanting various mantras to worship the Lord. we do have to understand that, you know, the Lord within the fire is one, is also a deity. So it's not just, you know, when we say deity worship, not just necessarily in a temple. That sacred fire is worshipping the deity form of the Lord. Although, you know, the deity or the Archa-Vigraha deity is one that, you know, you can perceive with your eyes. The deity within the fire is not so much perceivable. You may not necessarily be able to perceive the, you know, forearms of, you know, Vasudeva, Narayan. Although sometimes he does appear. Where do we read that? Where he actually appeared? That was in the previous section. Who was performing?
Was it Nabi?
Was it Nabi? Nabi, yeah. And the Lord who's there, he doesn't always appear. At that time he appeared. He's always there, but he doesn't always show himself. And when Nabi performed, he actually showed him. Yes, I'm here. Like that. So that deity is there, but he's not always seen. The Archa-Vigraha in the temple is always seen, but nonetheless they're both deities. The deity in the mind is only seen by the person, you can worship the deity within the mind, within your heart, but that deity may be perceived just by the person who's worshipping. You can do a full worship, you can dress the deities, put garlands, that's also deity worship. But that's only seen by the person, you know, who's performing the worship. Otherwise, I'll just see them sitting there doing nothing. So the deity within the fire, in the same way that we worship the deity within the mind, you know, the priest performing the fire yajna is perceiving the forearm form of the Lord, you know, at least within their heart. So that is also deity worship.
Is like Narayan in the fire, generally like, consider fire as Agni, so they're both there, is it? Agni.
Mm. Both. We're going to read in this chapter shortly how Bharat also worshipped the sun, the Lord within the sun. So there's another example of the Lord within fire. The sun is really just a, we're going to read that, and so it's just the same principle. Usually, you know, within the sun is the sun god is there, who's usually not visible, and the Supreme Lord Vasudeva is there, Narayan, and the sun god is there also. So it is a similar principle that in the fire Agni is there, and Lord Narayan is there as well. yeah. So we discussed that, and any other questions on that? So in verse 7, in this way, being purified by ritualistic sacrifices, the heart of Maharaj Bharat was completely uncontaminated. His devotional service unto Vasudeva, Lord Krishna, increased day after day. Lord Krishna, the son of Vasudeva, is the original personality of Godhead, manifest as the Supersoul Paramatma, as well as the impersonal Brahman. Yogis meditate upon the localized Paramatma situated within the heart. Gyanis worship the impersonal Brahman as the Supreme Absolute Truth, and devotees worship Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose transcendental body is described in the Shastras. His body is decorated with Shivatsa, the Kustubha jewel, and a flower garland, and his hands hold a conch shell, disc, club, and lotus flower. Devotees like Narada always think of him within their hearts. So here Prabhupada mentions in his purport that Vasudeva or Sri Krishna, the son of Vasudeva, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is he who manifests within the heart of the yogis as Paramatma, and it is he who is worshipped as the impersonal Brahman by the Gyanis. Paramatma feature is described in the Shastras as having four hands holding various four items. All devotees who think of the Paramatma within the heart worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the temple deity. They also understand the impersonal features of the Lord and his bodily rays, the Brahman effulgence.
You might not always feel like our devotion is increasing day by day.
Yeah, and decreases.
Well, it's better when we do. And of course that's where you know, the various activities that we perform you know, become a guideline. So, you know, people may increase their chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra on Japa beads, and may increase from 1 to 2 to 4 to 16. And then they may increase the level of concentration, the mood of prayer, the purity of prayer, and they may also increase the service that they do to the holy name. So, you know, there are, it's all chanting, but there are different increments that one can make, you know, which are mentioned in the scriptures. So, you know, we can measure that. And as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, when one becomes qualified to perform all the activities according to the rules and regulations for their situation, when they become qualified and they can perform all those activities nicely, then they become qualified for the next level of advancement. So advancement means that the activities that we're now performing, we can do them properly as they should be done. When we can do them properly, then we move on to another level of things that may have previously been not within our scope of, you know, capabilities, but which now we're going to try and make them also part of. So, and of course, you know, that's one of the things, you know, which these classes like Bhava Bhakti Shastri can help us with. Hare Krishna. The course is designed so that devotees develop certain knowledge, so that can increase our knowledge, awareness of the teachings, the essential teachings, components of that teaching, and you know, key aspects of that teaching, key verses which sum up, you know, key aspects of that teaching. It's like, you know, one time Prabhupada asked one of his devotees, I think it was Guru, Kripa, you know, he was a bit of a sloka pundit. What is the most important verse in the Vedic literatures?
To always think of Krishna, never forget him.
That's one.
Is it a verse?
Yeah.
In which book?
All is available.
Within a lot of ages.
All
ages.
I got
the
favourites.
He said, you know, this devotee, the disciple said, Harinam, 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 Eva Kevana. Prabhupada said, no. He said, I was trying to think of the Sanskrit. Anyway, I'll say the translation. Only unto he, or only unto that person who has implicit faith in both the spiritual master and the supreme personality of Godhead, are all the imports of Vedic knowledge automatically revealed. So one who has that implicit faith in the spiritual master and the supreme personality of Godhead, Bhagavan, not just Paramatma, not just Brahman, but the supreme personality of Godhead, and is represented to that person, all of the imports of the Vedic scriptures will be automatically revealed to that person.
Where does that verse come from?
It's yasya deve tata guru tastaitya vikita yat prakashante mahatma. Yasya, let's see if it's in here.
No,
it's from the Vedic literature. Here, look at this. Page 13, to see the. I must have a little skeptic of faith, because this verse has just been revealed. Yasya deve para bhakti yata deve tata guru. Confirm. Tashayate katita hyata prakashante mahatmanaha. Page 13 of the Bhagavatam, or in the purport to chapter 1, verse number 6. If one has unflinching faith in the Supreme Lord and the Spiritual Master, the essence of all the Vedic knowledge is revealed to him. It's from the Svetasvatara Upanishad 6:23. And, you know, so
this is the most important.
In all the Vedas, yeah. So, you know, as we were describing, by performing, by, you know, doing bhakti by bhava, bhakti sasya, etc., you gain certain knowledge and knowledge of some of the principal things, you know, that the essential items of that knowledge. And then, of course, there are skills. So that verse is describing having faith in the spiritual master, the supreme Lord. The skills would be acting upon that. You know, trying to develop a relationship with the spiritual master, you know, and hearing the instructions of the supreme personality of Godhead through, you know, the spiritual master and his representative. So, hearing is a skill. You'd be surprised how many people in this world can't just hear, especially the message of the supreme personality of Godhead. Very, very, very hard, very difficult. Hearing, you know, so simple, but it is one of the most difficult things that anyone can do in this world, especially in Kali Yuga. Just hearing. But it's a skill to do it. You know, we have this class every Saturday, and there's only a few people who can come here and hear. It's a skill that most people can't. They can do many other things, but to sit and hear, it's very hard, very difficult. And so, and then by gaining that knowledge, by developing those skills. So, for instance, you know, you can tell you're advancing when, yes, I'm gaining knowledge and I'm putting into practice, you know, I'm developing the skills of hearing and preaching and chanting nice rounds and not talking bijapas. So I'm developing those skills, staying awake in Bhagavatam class and all that. That's a skill. And then, you know, that knowledge and those skills become literally the... I think it was Plutarch who said, character consists of habit-long practice. So then you're literally your character, your personality, there's an intrinsic set of values whereby, because of those values, you automatically demonstrate your skills and knowledge on just to every situation that you come across, because there's a value base. So if those values, those skills and that knowledge are developing, then you can say that you're advancing, progressing. So there are definite that's the beauty of such courses like we're doing here, is that it does give you yardsticks by which you can measure. If a person comes in here in the beginning, now if we go back, you know, to 2000 and the Stone Age, when was it? 2004, is it? Yeah. We may not have had, much understanding and knowledge like that, and our ability to practice the little we knew was, and our values, whether we sort of, we might hear it in here, but we don't know whether we can actually speak to someone else about it with any conviction, or put it into our own lives or what have you, So if you, those devotees who, have gone over many years, they can see that the knowledge, the skills, the values have increased, and therefore these yardsticks by which they can measure, that service to the personality of Godhead is increasing day by day. It has to be. There are many devotees who, are in the temple for many, many years, sometimes decades, who don't take it upon themselves to measure their progress by the proper yardsticks. They're measuring it just by what's going on in their head. Some idea that they come with that they should have discarded but never did. Then they don't know how, whether they're making advancement or whether they're going backwards, or, whether they're in the same place like that. Knowledge and detachment are two of the principal yardsticks. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu descended to deliver the process of devotional service along with knowledge and detachment. So, you can measure devotional service to some degree or another by that knowledge and detachment. Because, if a person is becoming more devoted to Krishna and having greater faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they will naturally, concomitantly, they will be becoming detached from enjoying the material world to the degree that they're experiencing a loving relationship and seeing the reality of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the spiritual world and our eternal relationship with Him and us being an eternal soul, not the body. Concomitantly, as that becomes a reality, then enjoying the material body you know, in disregard to Krishna's instructions, you know, so we become detached naturally because we have a higher taste and we don't want to displease Krishna. So, you know, that detachment is, and the knowledge, you know, or sambandhijnana, knowledge of our relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and knowledge of how to perform, you know, service to Him, and some, you know, realizations of, you know, a taste for the reciprocal dealings with the Lord, you know, that should be there. So, you know, it's not as if you can be a devotee for, you know, any more than literally a week and not know that the teachings of this philosophy is you're not this body. You know, that knowledge has to be there. over a period of time, a devotee would have to understand that Bhagavan, or the personality of Godhead, is the topmost feature of the Absolute Truth, and the features of Paramatma and Brahman are subordinate. If someone doesn't have that knowledge, then, you know, their progress is, you know, considerably further back. Most of those things, you know, a devotee who's listening should have picked up in the first day or two. And that, you know, that Krishna is the Supreme Person, I've got it, not Shiva, not this one, not that one. And all the incarnations come from Krishna. Within about a week, most of those things should be there, that knowledge is there. If someone's been around for 10 years, or 15, 20 years, which I know people, and they still can't grasp that Krishna is not an incarnation coming from Vishnu, and that Vishnu is supreme, then, you know, their knowledge is lacking. So, you know, you can measure, you know. So if these things are there, you should be able to measure. Yes, yes, I'm developing significant proper knowledge of the Absolute Truth, on, and by practicing devotional service in a way that I know is avoiding the various offences, I'm getting a taste, and that taste is giving me that knowledge, and that taste is giving me detachment, then you can measure.
Still, does it require some mentoring, or
It does, because people don't know the yardsticks, you know, and you know, one of the ways you can see is, you know, just for instance, you can go to the Prasadam Hall and watch devotees serve Prasadam at lunchtime. There are so many things that are being done incorrectly. You know, it's just, I have to turn my back on it. But, you know. But you know, but those activities seem to go on year after year, from what I've seen. So it's, you know, whereas, you know, there are, you know, this is where the movement is a little different now. You know, because the temple was, I guess, not as many devotees. And even I was listening to a few of the, you know, very prominent sannyasi gurus in our society, and you know, they concur that, you know, there was a stronger, a stricter adherence to Prabhupada's way of doing things previously than what there is now. There's a liberalism, you know, in ISKCON. Now, that's good in one sense, because it's good to be liberal, more liberal than we were. We lost a lot of, you know, because previously what was happening was that generally devotees followed Prabhupada's way of doing things more carefully than what they do now. But where they didn't really understand what Prabhupada's mood was, and they're very, very strict. We lost a lot of devotees that way. So now they're a bit more liberal, which means you don't lose as many devotees, but because they're not as strictly adhering to Prabhupada's mood and way of doing things, then we keep a lot of devotees, but we don't necessarily they don't necessarily imbibe Prabhupada's way of doing things. See, so there's a bit of a catch 22 or a payout. What is it? Not a payout. A price. What's that?
Compromise.
Yeah, it is a bit of a compromise. Yeah. So, what's that?
A quid pro quo.
Yeah. You know, in Prabhupada's day, of course, all the women and men preached, everyone. Pretty much. Those preach equally. It was a Hare Krishna. It was a facility that Prabhupada offered, and that was not there in Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura's time. Women did not preach in Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura. It was a facility that Prabhupada offered, and they took it wholeheartedly. So the men preached, the women preached, the children preached, but everyone preached. Because we have a large Hindu following now, the women tend to stay home more, much more than what they used to do. Stay home, look after them, and like that. So it's good, you know, as I say, there's benefits. It's made the movement a lot more stable. But at the same time, it's a little different to how Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada liked men and women to, you know, as much as they can to preach. You know, look after your home, look after your family, you know, look after each other, look after the children. None of that should be neglected at all, not even the slightest. But what happens now is that, you know, previously, if there was an opportunity to get out and preach, they take it. Now it's become, that doesn't even enter the mind. So, you know, in the name of looking after the children and the home and everything like that, it just doesn't even, you know, enter. You know, that's just what I do. I don't care. I'm not a preacher. So, of course, you know, preachers should be trained. You know, there are a lot of different, various things like that. So, what was it? Who asked that question?
Sorry?
Who asked that question? Or made that comment?
Obviously.
So, yeah, I was talking about, you know, prasadam. That's right. You know, how, you know, you can see some things go on for many, many, many years. You know, as a young devotee, you know, if something was amiss, it just wouldn't happen the following week. You know, if something was, you know, if devotees weren't serving the prasadam properly, the next week they would be. They'd be brought to attention, they'd be corrected, and they'd be doing it Prabhupada's way. There's no way, you know, that they wouldn't do Prabhupada's way of doing things, you know, the proper etiquettes and courtesies, just, you know, year in, year out. You know, Prabhupada's way very quickly, you know. There's a way of doing things, a Prabhupada like way. So, but now, you know, certain things which are not even ISKCON standards, you know, the ISKCON travesties, it can go on for many years. I'm not talking about this temple, but, you know, in general. Oh, being rude to guests while serving prasadam. You know, being rude to devotees, being rude to brahmanas, being rude to senior devotees, being rude to children.
In the sense?
What's that?
In the sense, like rude in the sense?
Rude, you know, you know, dismissive, harsh speech, you know, making people feel bad and completely unresponsive to their requests. That, you know, you get what I give you, and you know, because you have, you know, dared to ask me for something different, I won't be serving you again. These are regular occurrences. So I have people come up to me because I guess they see me as a senior devotee, probably because I'm just here for, you know, I'm old, I've got some grey hairs. But so a lot of people come up to me and say, you know, I've just been upstairs, I've just been served, and I want to tell you, if some of my friends were served like that, they wouldn't come back. And you know, I get a lot of reports. And I've seen that. Yeah. So.
But it depends on what. When did they come?
Who?
If they come for the Mahabhishan in the evening, it will be less time.
Well, at what time can we offend people? What is the best time?
I'm just saying, you know, because. See, the other thing is, they have to also, you know, adjust to. If someone keeps on asking, I want more and more. See, it depends also, you know, because in the past, right, there are only very less congregation. Now, the congregation is also building up, so the temple cannot cater to all the needs of the congregation.
Yeah. What happens is that.
They can't make, you know,
yeah, no, you. Well, that's exactly what I'm saying,
but
right?
It's an attitude thing. It's not a service attitude. Like if you go up and you have your plate there and the guy whips out his mobile phone with his other hand and starts talking on the mobile phone, you don't really feel like, thank you for giving me the food offered to God. You know, it's just like, go away. You're not significant. You shouldn't be here. I don't want to talk to you. I want to talk to the person on the mobile. It's like, what? How clean is that anyway? I mean, it's not even smoochy.
Yeah, it's not good. But, you know, that what you were just saying is, you know, so, okay, we've got a good excuse now to let Prabhupada stand and slip because the congregation is getting big and we just can't deal with the problem.
No, I didn't say that. What I'm saying is, we have to also consider the one aspect of it. You know, you're considering one aspect. The other aspect is, in the past, you know, the congregation was less. So it can be catered. You know, now, everything, there's a roster, you know. So people can talk and can make excuses, whatever, maybe, as you said and what you said. But someone has to do the job, Dr. Guru. Everyone comes and takes and go away. Who's the person who's doing the job?
Yeah.
If you ask someone to clean, you know, he says, I'm shanti. What's the purpose of shanti? To do service. Things like that, you know. Everyone can talk, but who's doing the real service?
Yeah.
You ask someone to come on the Sunday feast? No.
Uh-huh.
How many Brahmins are doing Sunday feast? There are more than 80 Brahmins here.
So
things like that, you know, it's a matter of people coming and giving themselves and doing. That is lacking.
So what happens is that over some years, which, you know, is that the original standard has not been done for so long, that if someone tries to introduce it, people think, what is this new thing? that we've been doing it. And, you know, I've had that experience, you know, where you try and introduce Prabhupada's standard in Prabhupada's temple, and you get, you know, who is this? You know, we've been doing this like this way for so many years. So, which is my exact point, that, you know, there is a proper way that Prabhupada liked things being done, and we should always strive for that. We should not make excuses that we don't have manpower, we don't have, money. You know, so for instance, let me give you an example. The difficulty with the prasad not being served properly is solved very easily. You have, you know, one person who understands the standard and just oversees. That person should be, you know, a mature person who's able to deal with both the servers and with the guests. Because naturally there's always, you know, but they're able to sort of troubleshoot and oversee and watch the standard of cleanliness, watch the behaviour of the service towards the guests, you know, watch the behaviour of the guests towards the service, you know, the clean-up, the punctuality, the standard of food, the standard, you know, like that. One person can do that, and problem solved. You don't need 100 people. You just need one person. One person. It doesn't. When I was in New Zealand, we did Pāti Yatra, and we would have festivals every 2 or 3 days in a major city around the North Island, and we'd go to every city, and we'd travel for about nearly 2 months. And we'd have 200 to 500 people, and my only service was just to do exactly that. I didn't cook, I didn't serve, I just watched the serving, and I explained to the servers, this, you know, in this circumstances, we'll serve like this. In this circumstance, we'll serve like this. And I would say, you know, that. Here, you know, serve the women, the children. There's some children crying over there. Go and serve them first, and I'll settle down. And then, you know, it's quiet in here for everyone else like that. Here you have a child screaming, and you know, no one does it. That was the only, that was the thing. That was the one service I did for my guru just as we travelled around. And you would have, it wouldn't matter whether you had 500 people, 1,000 people, or 50 people. You only need one person who actually does it. But, you know, so I don't think there is an excuse. You don't need a lot of people. And you don't need a lot of money. You don't need a lot of people. And to train a person to do that, you know, you can speak to them in a couple of hours and then just let them take over the service and then let them. It's not a big thing. You know, if the will is there, it can be done. But anyway, you know, the point is that there are yardsticks. The yardsticks are given by the Bhagavatam, the Gita, and by Srila Prabhupada. And, you know, the question is, how do we...